PCJ Radio International presents the longest-running international show, The Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Pehon.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome again to another edition of your program, Happy Station from PCJ Radio International. It's very nice to have you with me. Well, on today's show, we're going to be bringing you part... I'll tell you about it after we take a listen to our first song today, because it is rather interesting and actually rather special. But first, actually, let's get to music. All of you who are regular listeners to the program, and maybe who are not, have, of course, at some point or another heard of James Last, one of the most successful big band leaders of all time. He, of course, is well known taking his big band and doing big band interpretations and orchestral versions of popular songs. Well, of course, he recorded in the 1960s and at other times with other well-known artists. Well, recently I came across an album that was recorded back in the late 60s, and it's called James Last Presents George Walker. George Walker. Sadly, I haven't been able to find out any information about George Walker. The only information that I did find out is that he was a nightclub singer from Montreal who the then, back in the late 60s, Polydor Canada director said, oh, we should record an album with him and send him to Hamburg, Germany and record with James Last, which is what they did. After spending a little bit of time, I found out this is the only album that he ever recorded. I haven't been able to find out any other information if he's alive, what else he did, or anything. Except the fact that he was, well, if he's still alive, is from Montreal, Canada. So if there's anybody out there that does know anything about a singer by the name of George Walker, do let me know. I'm really kind of curious. Anyway, from the album, James Last Presents George Walker, A Kind of Hush.
Now there's a kind of hush all over the world. Tonight, all over the world, you can hear the sounds of lovers in love. You know what I mean, just the two of us, and there's nobody else in sight. There's nobody else, and I'm feeling good just holding you tight. So listen very carefully, closer now and you will see what I mean. Darling, it isn't a dream. The only sounds that you will hear is when I whisper in your ear, I love you forever and ever. There's a kind of a hush all over the world. Tonight, all over the world, you can hear the sounds of lovers in love. There's a kind of hush all over the world. Tonight, all over the world, you can hear the sounds of lovers in love. You know what I mean, just the two of us, and there's nobody else inside. There's nobody else, and I'm feeling good just holding you tight. Listen very carefully, closer now and you will see what I mean. Oh, it isn't a dream. And the only sound that you will hear is is when I whisper in your ear, I love you forever and ever. Now there's a kind of a hush all over the world. Tonight, all over the world, you can hear the sounds of lovers in love.
Singer George Walker with the James Last Orchestra from a Powder release from 1967 called James Last Presents George Walker, a singer who I've been actually trying to find out more information about for, well, actually quite some time now, but haven't been able to find out anything. It's the only album that he ever seems to have ever recorded. There's no other information about TV appearances or anything. Which is odd because if you know you can Google anything about anybody really, and find out something, but on the internet it's like probably the only person on the internet who really doesn't exist. Anyway, if there's anybody out there that does know anything about this singer, anything else about George Walker, let me know. Now the only thing I have been able to find out is that, well, he was a nightclub singer in Montreal, Canada. And he was signed to do this album by Polydor Canada, who sent him to Hamburg, Germany, to record with James Last. That's it. Anyway, hopefully one day we will find out something. It would be nice, actually, if he hopefully is still alive, or something about him. Anyway, we'll try to look into that, and we are looking into that, and I have been looking into that for some time. Anyway, you are listening to Happy Station, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. This is an album that we're going to be featuring on today's program after our next song called Long Live Shortwave. Yes, an LP called Long Live Shortwave. We're going to feature one side of the album because it is rather interesting and features a well-known shortwave personality who worked at the BBC World Service. But first, let's take a little listen to Savage Garden with one of their big hits from, not really that long ago, Truly, Madly, Deeply.
Shining brightly in the velvet sky, I'll make a wish.
featuring Natalie Debody by Savage Garden. Well, we're featuring today side one of an album that came out in 1979. It's called Long Live Shortwave. Actually, the full title is Mitch Murray Presents Long Live Shortwave. Now, who is Mitch Murray? Well, Mitch Murray is one of the UK's leading songwriter and record producers. He was responsible for a number of number one hits many, many years ago. Songs by Freddie and the Dreamers, Jerry and the Pacemakers, Georgie Fame, and many others. He was also an avid shortwave listener. So he put together this album called Mitch Murray Presents Long Live Shortwave that came out in 1979 and was produced and compiled in the Isle of Man. The album is actually quite interesting. Now, side one is a very interesting and fun and entertaining explanation of what shortwave is. And that's the side of the album that we're going to be taking a listen to on the program. Side two is even more interesting, and we'll keep that for a future program. But it features interval signals from some well-known international broadcasters. Interval signals that were either sent to him to use for this album, or ones that he recorded with his own orchestra because he couldn't get a copy. We'll listen to that one on a future date. Now, the album was also put together by the assistance of Henry Hatch. Yes, Henry Hatch, one of the most celebrated shortwave personalities of all time. He was known by millions of people around the world as the host of the BBC World Service Radio Club. Remember that? The BBC World Service Radio Club? Well, he's also featured on this recording. So today, on this edition of Happy Station, part one of Mitch Murray Presents Long Live Shortwave.
Hello there, this is Mitch Murray. If you own a shortwave radio, you are lucky enough to have at your fingertips a space and time machine. Any time of the day or night, you have the power to listen into sounds being made thousands of miles away, all from the comfort of your own armchair. Your receiver has the unique ability to bring you information and entertainment at the speed of light from all parts of the world, even from outer space. It can help you learn a language, pursue a hobby, study the lives and cultures of people many thousands of miles away, or give you endless hours of pleasure with music and drama. You can eavesdrop on messages between aircraft and ground control, ship to shore, explorers in the North Pole, missionaries in Africa, or linger a while with the world's exciting network of amateur broadcasters. There's nothing quite like the thrill of shortwave listening. A truly unique and satisfying hobby, and I hope this recording helps to further your knowledge and interest in DXing. The subject of shortwave is so vast that it would be impossible to be truly comprehensive or to attempt to cover every aspect in the short time available to us. However, I will do my best to provide you with a solid background to the subject and will also tell you where to get further information and guidance, whether it be from books, publications, or DX clubs. They all have a part to play. The first users of shortwave broadcasting were radio amateurs. From the beginnings of radio, all communications took place above 200 meters or 1.5 megahertz. But the hams, who were not able to use high power for their transmissions, started to experiment with higher frequencies in order to expand their activities. They found that as they went into the shorter waves, they were able to reach longer distances, and it wasn't long before broadcast stations and other communicators jumped onto the bandwagon, so that today we have the situation where most long-distance broadcasting is carried out between 3 and 30 megahertz. At this point, I think it worth mentioning that the term hertz merely means cycles per second, in other words, the frequency. The term was named after the German physicist Heinrich Hertz, one of the pioneers of radio transmission. 10 kilohertz is equivalent to 10,000 cycles per second, and of course, 10 megahertz means 10 million cycles per second. In the booklet issued with this album, you will find the formula for conversion from meters to frequency and vice versa. Some radio stations will only announce their whereabouts in one format, and if your radio doesn't have both a meter and a hertz readout, you will, on occasion, need the know-how to convert. The formula is wavelength in meters equals 300 divided by the frequency in megahertz. You will also find the reverse of this formula in the booklet so that you may make your own conversion. Despite modern receiver techniques and the high power which is used in radio transmissions, at times the radio wave just doesn't make it. This is because the transmission of radio is dependent upon the atmosphere of the Earth and the effects of the sun. Short waves travel vast distances because they are able to bounce around the world using the ionosphere as a reflective surface. Take a look at the diagram in the booklet. When we are talking of an area of thousands of miles, the radio signal will have to make several leaps to reach its goal, and conditions along the route will affect the way it's received. In order to overcome a change of conditions as simple as daylight and darkness over the transmission path, broadcast stations constantly have to change wave bands. The subject of propagation is vast and complicated, but it's certainly worth studying in depth if you are a serious shortwave listener. Learn about the various layers of the Earth's atmosphere and how they affect the radio wave. Follow the frequencies recommended by the international broadcasting organizations for your part of the world. Listen in on high frequencies during daylight and lower bands during darkness. Don't be too disappointed if you don't hear a station you feel should be there. It could be due to a multitude of conditions, including one called SID, sudden ionospheric disturbance, which can be so sensational that you may believe there is something wrong in your receiver. Now let us have a look at the whole radio spectrum. You can divide the radio spectrum into seven parts. Firstly, the very low frequency band. This begins at approximately 10 kilohertz and rises to 30. The long wave broadcasting band runs from 30 to 300 kilohertz, and the medium wave broadcasting band covers 300 kilohertz to 3 megahertz. Now we come to the 3 to 30 megahertz band, which, as I said before, is the short wave or high frequency band. Next comes VHF, very high frequencies, 30 to 300 megahertz. And these are used for high-quality sound reproduction and stereo broadcasting, as well as some television and point-to-point communications. We are now getting into the really high frequencies. The UHF band is 300 to 3,000 megahertz, and many more television transmissions use this range. The super-high frequency band, SHF, ranges from 3,000 to above 21,000 megahertz, and these are the frequencies used extensively by radar. Now, if you've come across the term gigahertz, this means 1,000 million cycles or 1,000 megahertz. Now that we have looked at all the frequency ranges carrying interceptable signals for most purposes, let us examine some in detail. In the booklet, you will find a list of the broadcast bands beginning at the low frequency end, and you will find the meter bands and their frequency equivalents. In between the 9 shortwave broadcast bands, there are many other transmissions. One type is known as fixed and mobile. This covers aircraft to ground control, ship to ship, police, ambulance, fire services, and a vast amount of others. While tuning in between the broadcast bands, you will hear some very strange sounds indeed. You may have put this down to interference, static, and other phenomena, but in fact, nearly everything you hear is some form of communication, and right now I will try to help you identify them. Have a listen to this. This is the sound of facsimile telegraphy. The radio sounds you hear are used for transmitting pictures by shortwave. With the correct equipment, photographs and charts can be transmitted many thousands of miles. This system is used by satellites transmitting weather photographs of the Earth and the press agencies transmitting photographs for reproduction in newspapers. There's a system called RTTY, which, although not as dramatic as facsimile telegraphy, is very widely used and is a very common occupant of the shortwaves. RTTY transmits messages by teletype. These messages may be in the form of international telegrams or press agency reports. They may be used by governments sending in their weekly messages to embassies all over the world, by international police organizations transmitting criminal records, or for weather forecasting. This is the sound of RTTY in action. To receive RTTY, you need a converter and a teletype machine. You may very well find these items quite cheaply at government surplus stores. And then, with a little know-how, you can link them to your receiver so that when the sound of RTTY comes over the air, your converter goes into action and your teleprinter prints out the message like this. Many amateurs communicate by RTTY and also by using slow scan television, which is a system of transmitting still television pictures by shortwave. This is the sound of one of those pictures building up. For a really accurate time check, there is nothing like tuning into one of the world's time and frequency stations. Most of these stations are run by government agencies. Some of them are commercial and some of them are military. The United States Navy, for instance, has several of these stations to assist the adjustment of navigational equipment. Some stations have voice announcements at regular intervals, and others, particularly the military stations, use Morse code, CW. This is the sound of the time and frequency station WWVH transmitting from Hawaii.
At the tone, 23 hours, 29 minutes, Coordinated Universal Time. National Bureau of Standards, WWVH, Kekaha, Hawaii. This station broadcasts on the internationally allocated standard carrier frequencies of 2.5, 5, 10, and 15 megahertz, providing time of day, standard time interval, and other related information. Inquiries regarding these transmissions may be directed to the National Bureau of Standards, Time and Frequency Services Section, Boulder, Colorado, 80302. Aloha.
The GPO station in Rugby, England, callsign MSF, transmits on 2,500 kHz, 5,000 kHz and 10,000 kHz. Here it is. You have a very good chance of receiving a time and frequency station wherever you live in the world. A full list can be found in the Complete Shortwave Listener's Handbook by Hank Bennett. More details about this can be found in the booklet. If you come across this sound on your receiver, you are listening to signals from outer space. This is the sound of a satellite relaying messages to an Earth station. Radio amateurs have a good friend in OSCAR. OSCAR is a satellite used by hams on the 10-meter band in over 100 countries. It stands for Operating Satellite Carrying Amateur Radio, and there are several OSCARs in orbit at the moment. During a normal evening, you can always rely on hearing them once or twice. Set your dial to around 29.5 megahertz and switch on your BFO. If you don't have a BFO control, use either CW or SSB modes. When an OSCAR passes overhead or nearby, the band will come alive with signals. These will become stronger as OSCAR gets nearer and then drop off as the satellite disappears across the horizon. You will hear a marked change in pitch to the CW signals due to the effect of what is called the Doppler shift. The advantage of this effect is that it is reasonably good evidence that the signals are coming to you via a satellite. The use of satellites is, of course, quite common with regard to weather pictures, which are relayed to Earth in facsimile form. You heard an example of the fax signal sound earlier. If you can get hold of a converter capable of tuning around the 136 to 138 megahertz range, you may well pick up some of the sounds coming from the United States, Soviet, and Chinese satellites. These VHF converters are available from SEM, PO Box 6, Castletown, here on the Isle of Man. Keep listening around these ranges whenever a new space mission is launched, and you may well be lucky. If you wish to try receiving signals from a little further afield, you may be fortunate enough to pick up Jupiter. Of course, the planet Jupiter does not actually operate a radio station, but it has a natural radiation which, when certain parts of the planet are facing Earth, produces radio signals of a low-pitched growling nature. Listen out for Jupiter around the 5, 10 and 15 megahertz frequencies used by WWV. The shortwave listening hobby can be very enjoyable whether you are listening to stations on a small portable with restricted shortwave facilities or on a more expensive communications receiver. Even the cheapest receiver is capable of worldwide reception, and nowadays you can achieve a high degree of sensitivity from the most modest radio. The minimum range you should aim for is 3 to 30 megahertz. But as you venture into the areas of more sophisticated radios, choose one with the frequency ranges and controls for your DX interest. If you like DXing hams, there are many receivers which concentrate on the amateur bands. One essential facility, if you are a follower of the amateur bands, is a BFO, a beat frequency oscillator. This will enable you to receive and decode single sideband and CW signals. Most amateur transmissions nowadays are SSB, and many receivers are available with the two selectable sideband positions, USB, upper sideband, and LSB, lower sideband. This is the sound of a single sideband voice transmission. Let's bring it into focus by operating the sideband controls. For receiving CW transmissions, you will find it most useful to have a receiver able to tune a narrow bandwidth. If your interest lies in the AM broadcast bands, and this is where we find the world's shortwave radio stations, you will need a general coverage receiver. Let me talk about one or two of the other features you may find on your receiver. Many radios feature an automatic noise limiter, ANL. Although by no means essential, the ANL can be quite useful, particularly in dealing with peaks of noise. A similar job is done by a noise blanker. Another feature you may find is AGC, automatic gain control. This control keeps the receiver's gain at its maximum for weak signals and yet controls the sudden blasting out of a loud signal. You may find an antenna trimmer. This will help peak signals received by your aerial. The S-meter is a very useful addition to your radio. This indicates the relative amount of signal being received and is a great help when tuning. Probably the most important aspect of a shortwave radio to the DXer is an accurate frequency readout. On some portables or cheaper sets, this tuning is assisted somewhat by band spread, but you generally find that the higher the price you pay for a shortwave radio, the more accurate it is. Some of the better shortwave sets these days have digital readout, and this is real luxury. But in addition to this, there are many variations of frequency readout facilities, and when choosing a shortwave set, try to find one which is both accurate and easy to use. Stability is an important part of a receiver. You may tune into one frequency when first you switch your radio on, but if the receiver is not stable, after it has warmed up, it may well have drifted quite a long way from the original location. It's a good idea in any case to warm up your receiver for about 10 minutes so that it assumes its normal operating temperature. When buying a receiver, take well into account selectivity and sensitivity. As a guide, when you are looking at specifications, the smaller the microvolt number, the better as far as sensitivity is concerned. And regarding selectivity, narrowest is usually best. A necessary part of your receiver is the provision for an external aerial. If you're using one of the cheaper portables, which includes a shortwave band, you may well find no connection for an external antenna at all. Even this may be partially overcome by winding about half a dozen turns of insulated copper wire around the extended rod aerial and dropping the end of the wire outside your window. No metallic connection to the set is necessary. However sensitive your receiver may be, it has to be fed with an adequate amount of energy from the passing radio wave, and in fact the first step in DXing is the aerial, or antenna. The serious shortwave listener should use an outside aerial. When the wave passes through any substance, the walls or steel structure of a building, its energy is absorbed and becomes much weaker. When erecting your antenna, keep it as far away as possible from trees and other obstacles, and in particular power lines, because these radiate a strong field of unwanted noise. Keep the lead into the receiver as short as possible, and you will then be maximizing the signal-to-noise ratio. Strand copper wire is the most practical to use, as it will withstand tension and bad weather conditions, but it need not have an insulated covering. There should be, however, an insulation between the aerial and any contact points before reaching the receiver. It is most important to keep your lead-in wire away from electrical cables and domestic equipment. In the booklet issued with this album, you will find some diagrams of different antenna types. If you live in an apartment and have no garden in which to put your aerial, you may well achieve some excellent results with a good internal aerial. If you have an attic, this would be ideal, but if you have to put your aerial in the room in which your receiver is used, put it in such a position as to maximize the signals coming to you from the area of the world in which you are interested. The DX hobby is enjoyed by millions around the world. Nobody knows for sure what DX stands for, but its meaning is clear. Long distance reception. People will DX almost anything. Medium wave, long wave, short wave, television, FM, utility broadcasts, the list is growing all the time. When propagation conditions are favorable, the DXer will enthusiastically listen out for stations which are not intended for his ears at all. It's all part of the fun. Every hobby is enhanced by having a goal. If you're painting, you look forward to the finished result. If you're writing music, it's often with the hope of a public performance or that somebody will put it on record. Shortwave listening also has a goal, the QSL. When a shortwave listener locates a distant station, he should make a note of the frequency, when it was received, using Greenwich Mean Time and the correct date. He should give details of about 15 minutes of the program content, what was said, what music was played, or any other relevant facts. He should describe his receiver and aerial and also give the station some technical information. One way of doing this is by using the SINPO code. SINPO stands for Signal Strength, Interference, Noise, Propagation Disturbance and Overall Merit. In the booklet supplied with this album, you will find details of the SINPO grading which will help you when sending out reports to radio stations. The stations find these reports most valuable from a technical and programming point of view. Your reward will come to you in the shape of a QSL card, which is normally a colourful picture postcard from the country of origin, with the station logo and a verification that you have indeed received their signal. Should you request it, they may also send you programme sheets, magazines and many other souvenirs. One word of advice, however. Enclose with your report an international reply coupon, which you can obtain from your post office. This will help with the postage and will encourage the station to reply promptly. For most DXers, a working knowledge of the English language is essential. However, many experienced shortwave listeners make it their business to learn a few keywords in each of the main broadcast languages. This greatly enlarges their QSL ability and improves their hobby all the way round. For students of political science or international affairs, shortwave listening can be a great help to their education. If you are studying a language, DXing not only gives you a chance to hear that language, but many stations actually broadcast tuition courses and issue textbooks. And of course, all of these features are available to you 24 hours a day, wherever you live in the world. The shortwave bands are also used by many clandestine stations. These are illegal broadcasters of various kinds. They may be pop pirates broadcasting from offshore vessels to the large European cities, or anti-government factions broadcasting from secret headquarters in the heart of their target countries. You will also hear the mysterious number stations, where a sequence of numbers is read in one of several languages. Nobody seems to know for sure what these are or where they come from. Many DXers find these stations a fascinating subject for collecting, and there are regular articles on them in the top DX magazines. If you are serious about the hobby, it is an excellent idea to join a DX club, either a local one or one of the large international associations. There's a list in the booklet enclosed. Tune in to the many DX programs broadcast by the leading radio stations of the world and get hold of a copy of the World Radio and Television Handbook. This is the Bible of shortwave listening. It's the most comprehensive list published, covering the world's radio and television stations on all wave bands. Later in this album, I will be playing you some recordings of the top shortwave stations in order to help you identify them. As you will realize, I cannot be totally comprehensive in the space of one album, and the World Radio and Television Handbook will be invaluable to you if you wish to identify or to learn more about those radio stations which, for one reason or another, could not be included in this record. In many cases, the WRTH includes a bar or two of musical signals, plus a written description of the normal identification. They supply you with the name and address of the station, the board of directors or administrators, frequency details, transmission times, transmitter details, and a host of other essential data. I really cannot recommend this publication highly enough. The editor is Mr. J.M. Frost in Denmark, and the WRTH is published once a year by Billboard Publications. Please refer to the booklet for further details. Incidentally, Billboard also published the World DX Guide, almost 200 pages filled with features on all aspects of DXing. The BBC's monitoring service in Caversham Park, England, publish a monthly news sheet of world broadcasting information, which is an excellent way to update your broadcast band knowledge. They will keep you informed as to frequency and service changes. They even cover clandestine stations, so you can certainly rely on a very good update of information through the BBC. You can write to them for subscription details at the address in the booklet. Listeners to the World Service of the BBC can subscribe to BBC London Calling, which lists and summarises the World Service programmes coming up during the following month. One very interesting DX publication is called Review of International Broadcasting, which is edited and published by Glenn Hauser. This monthly review is refreshingly different. It is more concerned with the content and quality of programmes and programme material than with the technicalities of receiving and DXing. People all over the world write to the magazine discussing shortwave radio programmes, and Glenn Hauser conducts a sort of monthly forum through the pages of RIB. Those of you most interested in DXing utility stations, that is, non-broadcast stations, are catered for by the SpeedX Utility Guide, which has sections on aviation, weather, marine, time stations and other utility communications. The top international magazines all have regular features on the shortwave hobby, both amateur and broadcast band, and most countries of the world produce publications keeping you up to date with the wonderful world of DXing. If you ever listen to the BBC World Radio Club, you will immediately recognise this old friend.
My name is Henry Hatch, amateur radio callsign G2CBB. And I'm pleased to have had the privilege of suggesting various ways to assist the armchair DXer to understand the more important points to improve his hobby. Now, I was asked to assist in the compilation of this disc because I've been a DXer now for some 50 years, during which time I was employed by the BBC. And with experience of this kind, I'm pleased to have had the opportunity of offering the armchair DXer some advice as to how to obtain the best results. And I think this disc really does cover the essential points in a comprehensive way. Part of my duty with the BBC was conducting correspondence relating to overseas listeners' reception problems. Looking back on their difficulties, it seems there were really two main problems of unsatisfactory reception. First, the type of aerial, and second, the use of the correct frequency. Well, we've given some advice on the suitability of aerials, but do remember, DX signals travel a great distance. They're weak on arrival and require the very best arrangements so that they're able to collect as much energy from the wave as possible. Your local station, by comparison, is overwhelmingly stronger. Also remember the frequency on which you listen. This is important. In general terms, 19 metres or higher during the day, but in darkness, 25 metres or lower in frequency. Now, if you intercept a transmission in a foreign language, don't pass it by as not understood, because broadcasting organisations on the hour and sometimes on the quarter hour periods make announcements in several languages. There's a great thrill to the DXer to move the tuning control a few kilohertz and to be taken, literally taken, from one side of the world to the other. If perhaps you have a cassette recorder, it's well worthwhile recording an announcement that you do not understand, because many of your friendly DXs may recognize the station and be able to help you. But whatever you do, keep a frequency list. Use a separate page for individual wavebands. You'll find how this will build up into a most useful source of information. Well, I do hope the information given on this disc will help you to improve results, and I think it is appropriate that I should leave you with the words so often spoken by radio amateurs: the very best of DX.
Thank you very much, Henry. The shortwave stations of the world use various identification signals in between their programs. After the break, I'll be playing you authentic recordings, which, with two exceptions, were all supplied by the radio stations themselves. The recording quality may not always be of the highest standard, but I'm sure you're going to find them invaluable. Frequencies and transmission times are subject to constant changes, and you may find that some of the information presented for you could have been revised. May I suggest that you keep your information up to date, making use of the publications I've already recommended. And now, stand by.
Part 1 of Mitch Murray presents Long Live Shortwave, an LP that came out in 1979. That also featured Henry Hatch, who was one time the host of the BBC World Service Radio Club, who's actually no longer with us. It's actually fun to listen to it. The album itself, on the flip side of the cover, features the cover of the World Radio TV Handbook Edition from 1976. I think it says 1970. No, it doesn't say 1976 at all. I'm looking at something else on it. But anyway, interesting, because it says in 19 whatever year this was, the 33rd edition, they printed over 55,000 copies of the World Radio TV Handbook. Today, it is nowhere near that. You know. Anyway, one of these days we'll feature part two of the album. Okay, time for more music again on your program, Happy Station. The Beatles, and Here Comes the Sun. the Beatles, and Here Comes the Sun. Actually, the song itself is written by George Harrison. It's a song, actually, that he also sang after the Beatles broke up as one of his classic songs. It is absolutely fantastic. From the album, which one is it? Abbey Road, yes. You are listening to Happy Station from PCJ Radio International. Now, at the beginning of the program, I played a piece of music by a singer who's called George Walker, a singer that I haven't been able to find any information about. The album is called James Last Presents George Walker. I've put George Walker in Google. I've put James Last Presents George Walker in Google. I put James Last and George Walker in Google. All kinds of different combinations, and it's only that one album that comes up. The only thing that I have been able to locate was an old newspaper clipping from the late 1960s that mentions George Walker being from Montreal, Canada. He was signed to the Polydor label, Polydor Canada label, and he recorded this album in Hamburg, Germany with James Last. That's it. That's all. Nothing else. And I am so, so curious because when I... If you look on the internet, you will find copies of this album still being sold today. They do fetch a heavy price because it is one of the more rare albums that James Last has put out, be it featuring George Walker, whoever he may be, wherever he is now, if he's alive or dead, nobody knows. And I am really curious. It's one of those things that, you know, it is interesting because he actually has a really good voice. So what happened? You know, what happened? Did the album just completely flop, and then there were thousands and thousands and thousands of copies that were pressed and are now just floating around everywhere. Whatever happened? I've put James Last, George Walker, Montreal. Only that one newspaper clip from the late 60s comes up, and that's it. Anyway, if you do know anything else about this singer, let me know. And it's the same address to contact us even for QSL cards. PCJ, QSL at PCJmedia.com. That's PCJ, QSL at PCJmedia.com. Because I'm just really curious. You know, it's the kind of thing I don't know if anybody has seen the documentary Searching for Sugar Man about Sixto Rodriguez, who recorded two albums in the one in the late 60s, one in the early 70s, and then completely vanished from the scene until a documentary filmmaker decided to put together a film about this singer and discovered that, oh, he's alive. And he had success in South Africa and Australia. But that was it. I wonder if that's the kind of story here, but I mean, it's just really, really odd. George Walker, let us know. PCJQSL at PCJmedia.com. Anyway, that's it. That's all we have time for on today's program. Our last song today is called Two Streets. Two Streets. And was a hit for one of Britain's most, well, I mean, legendary entertainers. He was a singer and also hosted a well-known entertainment program. And he was known for his cardigans. I'm speaking of Val Dunigan. Val Dunigan with Two Streets. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Powell wishing you well, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.
I'm so confused, and I don't know what to do. 'Cause the break that I have worked and waited for has come knocking at my front door. Two streets, one of them leads to a world I love, and the other one, the street that leads me home. Two streets, which one will I take? I do not know. If I take the first one, I'll be on my own. On my own. Love is so strange,
Since meeting her, my life has changed. I always thought I knew what I wanted from life. In my plans, there was not a wife. Two streets, one of them leads to a world I love, and the other one, the street that leads me home. Two streets, which one will I take? I do not know. If I take the first one, I'll be on my own, on my own. When she kisses me, I know just where I want to be. But this new job that I found takes me away. Should be leaving this place today. Then leads to a world I love, and the other one, the street that leads me home. Two streets, which one will I take? I do not know. If I take the first one, I'll be on my own, on my own.